Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing is brought to you by Influential, a strategic consultancy that takes the guesswork out of influencer marketing for your brand. We provide much-needed strategically crafted frameworks on how to implement influencer campaigns specific to your brand needs. Welcome to the Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing podcast. Today we chat to Deshni Govender, award-winning digital marketer, about the value of collaboration in the influencer marketing space. Currently, she's the head of channels of influence at Draftline AB InBev, and she gives us a sneak peek behind the curtain of how influence marketing is done at the alcohol giant. Before we listen to today's podcast, please remember to subscribe and share. Without any further delay, here's the episode. Enjoy. Hi, Deshni. Thank you so much for making time to join us today. I think just to start off, can you please maybe tell our listeners about yourself, like who you are, and also what does it actually mean to be head of channels of influence? What a weird term.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. So excited. I'm an avid listener, so this is great to be on.
Thank you.
Hey, no worries. You know, I always try to like keep this like within a tweet, you know, like let me do this bio within a tweet. And I end up rambling because there's so much to say. But essentially, you know, I would say I'm just a digital person. I've been in this industry probably about 10 years now, which is kind of showing my age. I started off in music. Back then, I would say, was the early influencer type days. Did a good spiel in the agency world, you know, did a lot of like, you know, brilliant basics understanding the world. And then I moved over, pivoted to consulting, which was quite exciting. And now I'm in the corporate space. So I always say I've seen every angle of the boardroom you can imagine. And now I'm in a really interesting space, which is channels of influence, or as everyone knows it, influencer marketing. And essentially here, AB InBev, our approach to influencer marketing, we deem it channels of influence, which is influential people, partnerships, and platforms. It sounds like a great tagline, I won't lie.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. And, you know, we are at the cusp of some very exciting, you know, elements. And I think data is just very central to everything that we do. So, yeah, I know we're going to dig more into it today, but that's just in a short snapshot what I'm about and where I'm at in life right now.
Very cool. You've obviously kind of done everything in every angle on the influence marketing, which is marketing and digital in general, which is amazing, which means you kind of know, kind of anticipate what every kind of genre needs, which is great.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned that because often I find, you know, I'm advocating for different elements. So I always use this cheesy line, like I understand the culture and the columns, you know. So like when I'm with so-called influencers or just the creative guys, you know, and they really want to break into corporate or pitch into brands, I'm often explaining to them this is how we need to approach it. And then obviously now being in corporate, but when I consulted and when I did a stint even at Accenture, it was just about helping the organization, or should I say corporates, understand how best to be relevant in culture. And I always find myself dancing between the two, which is quite exciting because you really can ready both parties to work together in a more, you know, in a more exciting manner, but also purposeful, so that it doesn't seem like it's a struggle.
No, absolutely. And I think that's so important, just to get everyone on the same page as well. And people learn from you so that the corporate guys understand the creatives a little bit better and the creative guys understand corporate a little bit better. I mean, win-win situation.
Exactly. And hopefully my biggest motto in life is each one teach one. And my one answer to guys, please, can we just pass the knowledge on? Gatekeeping stuff is just not where we need to be in life.
It's so 2010. I'm with you there.
You know.
So you at AB InBev Draftline, which brands do you specifically work on?
Yeah, no, I mean, everyone knows our brands. I mean, these are global brands. And it's quite interesting because the way the nature of influencer marketing, at one particular week, we could be working on all the brands. And the next week, we could be, you know, drilling down and probably focusing on Budweiser. But I do think that, you know, in its essence, having this whole so-called in-house channels of influence excellence team just provides guidelines, right? So when you work with partner agencies, they understand the lens of which AB InBev wants to kind of funnel their influencer marketing, and we in on it directly, we are very clear as to our global counterparts. So for an example, when you look at channels of influence in New York versus Brazil to London, we all show up in our own way due to localization of the market, right? But there are specific ways
Absolutely.
the way we approach it. And that's what I really love about us, you know, kind of having that kind of in-house council of excellence. We're just really helping everyone define what good looks like, purely because it's such a space where anything goes, you know. It's very, very different to what we thought influencer marketing was many years ago.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not even been around for that long. And when we started or became aware of kind of the first kind of online influences was what, around 2011, 2012 in South Africa, which was just bloggers, really. And it's now moved to being such a variety, which is amazing.
Exactly. But you know, the one time that kind of frustrates me, and I know I always see it on LinkedIn, people would say, oh, you know, the influencer bubble has burst. And I'm like, yes, rightfully so.
No.
But it doesn't mean that what's come out is a bad thing. Everything needs to evolve, right? So when I think back to my consulting days, I think this probably was about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. That was when I probably started my experience specifically within the alcohol vertical. So I've worked in spirits during my time at Diageo. I've now had enough beer experience. So I think, like, you know, when it comes to the alcohol space, I'm quite well versed. And I remember working on Reds and Brutal Fruit. I mean, back then we were bringing the Kardashians down, right? Back then we gave
Yeah.
one of his first deals. So we didn't call it influencer marketing. We were simply looking at a channel that was very creative, new, disruptive. Now we have the terminology. So you're quite right. I think we all have been doing influencer marketing in some shape or way or form. It's just that now it's a bit more structured. So yeah, it's quite exciting. And I think the brands that we work on, you know, there's proudly local brands like your Castle Lager, Castle Lite, Black Label, but then you get the big global brands like Corona, Budweiser. You know, these are brands that when you look at how your other markets are showing up, so like for example, you know, in New York, you're like, wow, you know, it's so interesting to see how they approach influencer marketing. And that for me is what excites me in my day job, just having all these kind of like shared networks that I can learn and grow and hopefully impact our local environment here.
That's what I'm also so excited about the space as well. And you hit it on the head by saying people keep going, influencer marketing is dying. It's really not. It's just evolving, right? Like everything in marketing keeps on evolving. Influencers were there before social media existed. They were just like journalists, and they're still great influencers, but we didn't call them that back then. Influencers are CEOs of companies, anyone who literally had a big presence and could influence masses of people, they were influencers.
Exactly. And I used to always use this cheesy line. I would say, you know, yes, Justin Bieber can, you know, put out an ad for Calvin Klein jeans, and then you could get a mommy blogger that would put one out, and she would talk about why they're the best, for example, mom jeans. She probably would sell more than Justin Bieber, because you know for a fact that even she's just got 50 people, those 50 people feel like she's a true advocate. And it's the whole depth versus width game. And we understand in corporates that reach is a major metric for us. But when we talk about our other elements later on in our interview, I think I talk and touch about quality reach. I'm just very frustrated in the industry right now where people are like, reach, great, but out of your million followers, tell me which are compliant, over 18, and a quality reach, you know? And that for me is that data set and the digital aspect that really excites me about influencer marketing.
I'm so glad you said that, because I'm always fighting with clients going, please don't go for the one with the most followers without actually checking if you're speaking to the right people and whether they are popular versus influential. It's two very, very different things.
Exactly, yeah.
So we know that influencer marketing, basically from 2016, the industry was worth like $1.5 billion, and now in 2020 it's looking to be like $10 billion. It's actually just mind blowing. But Most industries have obviously embraced influencer marketing, and we can see it in the alcohol space as well, especially in AB and Bev space as well. Your brands use influencers in such great ways as well. When did you guys kind of look at this and go, ooh, this could really work for us. Let's incorporate that into our like always on strategies.
Yeah, no, great question. You know, I like I said earlier, I don't think that it was an overnight, you know, let's just all of a sudden get into influencer marketing. I think there's always a semblance of it, you know, over the years where we're like, oh yes, you know, definitely, let's look at creators, let's look at influencers and such. I joined in 2019, and I think for me, that is when I realized there was going to be a big step change. I had just left Diageo, and back at Diageo, we were doing a lot of influencer marketing, and, you know, just kind of defining what the strategy needs to be for spirits, for an example. When I had joined, I was really intrigued by the fact that, you know, this was channels of influence. And again, locally here for Africa Zone, because that's where the vertical we work in, there nothing had been defined. So every brand team was doing influencer marketing, but there was no central defined approach as to this is what good looks like. And so from 2019 to all now, even though lockdown feels like 9 years, to now,
like, yeah, a decade.
We've made such great strides. So for an example, working with the legal team, I mean, I will unashamedly say that we have one of the strongest influencer contracts around, but not in a negative way. It protects the influencer as well as the brand. Then on compliance,
amazing.
Sure that every single piece of our comms out there, I mean, we have training sessions with our influencers, showing them the apps to have to put the 18 logo on their videos and Insta stories, right? Then you obviously have our partner agencies and the brand saying, cool, this is the activity we need to drive. But then we look at it, cool, how do we have a great relationship with the influencers? So we created a role called relationship managers, where you have a person mapped to a brand to look after those influencers, right? Then we have a digital influencer strategy. I always say to Hadley, who's on my team, he's the influencer strategist. I was like, you have such a cool job title that never existed before last year, you know? And then, of course, you know, just the department itself. So, yes, very much new, but the saying, everyone at AB InBev says this, we're building the plane as we're flying it. We know there's work to be done, but we're going ahead. We're steamrolling ahead, but we're also building the success measures, and which hopefully our counterparts in the industry sit up and take notice. You know, we have peers in other verticals, you know, that have come up to and said to us, hey, we really like how you approach this. How might we do this? And that for us is quite exciting. It's not very competitive in nature, rather that we grow the category and dominate in the same way. Yeah,
I love that. And I think it's so crazy that in such a small space of time, like you just said, like new job titles just started springing up, and it's real jobs that's probably going to be there forever and a day, and again just evolving.
It's exciting. You're going to look back, and you know, when I go back, and I'm a bit actually was very nostalgic today, because I was just looking at, you know, kind of like how we kind of got to where we are now. And one of my first jobs, like moving up from Durban to Johannesburg, was actually at Cerebra. So shout out to Mike and Craig that gave me the opportunity. And I mean, I was the first community manager on Vodacom. That was wild, right? And like,
oh, that's crazy.
I know. I went through a lot, but it was fun. It was fun, you know? And the thing is, you know, in the agency environment back then, we defined what social media was in South Africa. I mean, it yeah. is and was one of the greatest social media agencies. And I remember the fire I had inside thinking, what we're doing now, like we would train and stuff like that, is going to set up the industry for success. That same fire is in me right now. I know the work that we're doing is really going to benefit not just brands in-house at AB InBev as well as the rest of Africa, but also just our counterparts in other industries to say, you know what, this is something that's going to be around. And most importantly, the influencer feeling that they're protected, because more than them having followers, they are human beings and they are agencies in themselves. And they need to know that we respect them and it's a mutually beneficial relationship outside of a paycheck. And that is the core foundation of how my belief system is towards this role, you know, just fair and equal.
That makes me so excited, because I think that's a big worry about, from especially the influencer side, if you listen to the conversations that's been happening over the last year, they kind of like, they feel like they're being taken advantage of. They don't really know how to establish a career as an influencer because everyone's just doing things for free. They're not signing contracts. It's just horrible out there at times. So it's really nice to hear that a big corporate like AB InBev is taking a stand and saying, you know what, we want to be partners and we want to do it respectfully with being equals in a campaign, which hopefully will then rub off on the rest of the industry as well.
Yes, that's the hope and the goal.
So you spoke about, you obviously work with some agency partners when you do your campaigns as well as in-house. Yeah. How do you work together? Like, what kind of metrics do your partners kind of take ownership of? What kind of metrics do you guys take partnership of? And also, what metrics are so important?
Yeah, I know. I think everyone's kind of struggling with this right now. And my biggest
thing
is that it needs to be apples with apples. We can't all be chasing different metrics because it all needs to land into a bigger vision. And I think this is why we are excited that this is a function that sits in-house, right? I mean, speed and agility aside, it's just about making sure that everyone's aligned. It sounds like a very corporate term, but alignment is key, especially when you want to show up as a portfolio. So you're not just looking at, you know, for an example, a beer versus, well, we have an innovation department as well. So we've just launched a wine and a gin during lockdown, right? So you don't want that to be chasing different metrics. But I think, you know, the biggest thing for me when we sit down with our partner agencies is just understanding the brief and what is the objective. So we know this is a channel of influence, but sometimes, as we see, you know, like we've just done some merch for Flying Fish, it might just be that, you know, we need to have click-throughs to the website. Sometimes with innovation, it's just purely awareness. So once we have that very, very, you know, straightforward, open, authentic chat, because sometimes out of that kickstart, we find that, you know, maybe these KPIs need to be shifted a bit because we need to have very straightforward conversations. Then we'll move into what are our key metrics. And as you know, yes, we've got reach on the table. I mean, when I look back to my Diageo days, it was reach, recency, and impact. When I go here, it's the same situation. We just have different terminology for it. But when I look at the reach bucket, quality reach is important, and not because I just want to put a stake in the ground and be a bit different, right? We have a responsibility as a business within the alcohol space. So for me, when I bring an influencer in, or 7 or 10, we need to make sure that, number one, if they have, whether it's 50,000 or 1 million followers, almost 70% of that needs to be LDA, legal drinking age. So we have tools.
Sure.
That we funnel all our influencers through. It'll show us, for an example, influencer X has 40% of their influence of their influencer followers sitting in a specific age range. Then we know it's a go. So that's kind of the first check, right? Then the second check is just making sure that the person is, as you would say, kosher, you know, no scandals around them, no record, all of that. So we go through quite an intense kind of process. From that, then we say, okay, cool. Each influencer needs to be in a specific bucket, whether you're macro, you're nano, you know, or you're just even helping. Sometimes we consult with influencers just from a creative perspective. And then we attach the KPIs that are rightfully so. So quality reach is one thing. Impact is another, right? So when you look at engagement, you can't have engagement that's across the board. So I would never want an influencer to show up in an environment that is not innately for them. So we'll break it down by Twitter, Instagram stories, Instagram. We don't play on TikTok because it's not a brand safe environment. You can't age gate. And so, yeah, we go through the motions. But the main thing that I definitely would love for people to take out is collaboration, whether you're doing it in-house, because I know a lot of organizations now do have, for an example, you know, the brand managers adding on that task to their, you know, their role, bringing in partner agencies. Make sure everyone's comfortable and clear on the KPI. And once you have that, you know, everyone's on board, it's going to make it much more easier. And the last part for me, you need to communicate this with the influencer. I'm not saying you need to go and do a big digital deep dive and bore them, but they, if you are hiring them to do a job, they need to be clear of where their strength needs to lie. And sometimes when we do that with our relationship manager, we find that they bring in other tactics that we never thought of. We see it a lot, like, for example, on Brutal Truth. We have awesome girls that are on it, and they just bring such a specific, different, you know, lens to it, purely because they know their market so well. So, again, as you can see, collaboration is key here.
I love that you said that, because collaboration. I feel like, geez, can we make it the next buzzword in the industry? Because so often influencers get hired for their niche, for their talents, whatever, and that's fantastic, but they're never privy to, like, the bigger picture. They kind of get information on a need-to-know basis as they carry on during the campaign. Mm. And to be honest, if you've pulled them in and said, this is the big picture, this is what we actually want to do, this is all the other people working on it as well, more often than not, like you say, they will come up with some amazing things because they know their audience better than we do. Exactly. And you will get fantastic results.
Yeah, and the goal for us, like, in the next, I don't want to even say it's 3 to 5 years, it could happen sooner, is really to have most of our influencers on longer term contracts. You know, there's always going to be, you know, those elements where you can have a quick campaign and you need to find influencer channels. So it could be as well publishers that we look at and stuff. But, you know, the goal is, for an example, like, say, with the Budweiser, to say, you know, a certain DJ we have, you know, for a 2-year relationship. So he or she, we grow with them. And that's what we do right now. We sit down, we ask said influencer, what is your 6-month, 1-year, 2-year plan? And then we build a toolkit around it. And the toolkit, yes, there is a monetary, you know, element to it. But for an example, yeah, like last year, they were sent to Tomorrowland, you know, a group of influencers, because you can't buy that, right? But Budweiser has to it. So it's things like that where you really are making someone's dream come true. And you're also being fair and equal in the fact that if they're going to do content, they will be paid for it. And again, it just comes back to that point about being in the room with them, well, now virtually being in the room with them,
yes,
understanding what is their plans, because that's the beauty of being part of a big corporate, having access to great relationships globally that can really help these guys locally, you know.
Look, that's where influencer marketing is also evolving quite big into the space at the moment, is that longer term ambassador or relationships. And I think it's so great because you've just pointed out all the great things about it. Your brand grows with someone else. They become kind of part of your team, like the face of your brand, whatever that may be. You guys kind of have a mutually beneficial relationship. Their followers trust them. They're credible. At some point, your brand is going to be associated with that. It's just nothing bad about it. And if you're doing these quick campaigns, you find someone who really resonates with your target market, why not grow them?
Exactly, yeah. It just gives you all the good feels, you know, when you do it right.
Exactly. I love it so much. I'm so excited to see what's going to happen over the next year because things change so quickly. And I think 2020 saw such a huge shift that I think in the next 6 months, there's just going to be amazing things that's going to come out.
Yeah, I definitely think the role of the influencer will change a lot. So in some markets, maybe it won't be specifically ours. Maybe it might be more in the beauty space first. We're going to see e-commerce. I mean, we've seen it with Alibaba and Tmall, you know, where we have influencers having shop parties, you know. So that will be really, really exciting to see. And I think also just this whole, I wouldn't say publisher mindset, but I think on the influencer side, and I chat to a lot of the guys, they're thinking about their YouTube, they're thinking about their own platforms, their websites, and social media as an additional channel. So for now, I can, like, go in and tune into, for an example, Moosley's content and get it on demand, or AKA, or whoever it is. And this whole on-demand mentality is where it is at, as opposed to, okay, I might find their content on Instagram. I chat to a lot of the guys, and I'm really surprised that they're investing money in paid media. A lot of the DJs are doing this now, so you're seeing ads. They're investing in teams. There's photography. So, yeah, we can't discount. Influencers are upping their game, you know?
Absolutely. And I think it's so important, and I've been waiting for this to happen for a couple of years now, because everyone's on social media, that's great. But the moment you build your audience there and you don't have your own kind of channel that you own, tomorrow, if Zuckerberg decides to shut it down, that's it.
Yep. Yeah.
Then you kind of need to start from scratch. So it's very smart of them to start thinking about owning their own channels, because if that happens,
yeah,
they're still okay. They still have a platform.
Most of you know that Influential is our podcast sponsor. But did you know that my co-host Anne heads up the agency? And that is the first ever boutique agency in South Africa that specializes in developing strategy for influencer marketing. Anne and her team are experts in the field and have spent years honing their skills and knowledge about influencer marketing and at some of the country's biggest PR and media agencies. The moment that you think you might want an influencer campaign, make sure to call or email them first, because without strategy, you might not have the outcomes that you would like and are looking for. In addition to talking all things influence on this podcast, and also puts together the fantastic Influential newsletter that comes out every month. And this is another way for you to keep up to date with the industry. The link to latest newsletter is in the show notes. Check it out. And if you like, please subscribe. And contact details are also on there. Let's keep the conversation flowing.
So Desh, can you maybe tell us or walk us through one of your most memorable or favorite campaigns that you've been part of so far?
Sure, yeah. Like, you know, I always, like, with questions like these, I'm like, oh, I don't want a favorite to come out because everyone I love, you know.
So my favorite child, which one?
Exactly. And so, you know, so many more coming out over the next few weeks, you know. I mean, like, when I started, I remember the first month I started, it was in November in 2019, which seems so long ago. One of the first ones on was, like, Republic of Extra Cold for Faster Light, you know, just taking over Cape Town. And then, of course, Brutal Fruit has just been evolving and doing amazing stuff. Same with Flying Fish. But you know, one particular campaign that really stood out, and I think most of ours during lockdown were very purposeful, but it's a brand that I've been spending a lot of time on, is Stella Artois. And you know, it's been around in the country for quite some time, you know, but there is a real resurgence and energy around it. And the whole Life Artois at Home campaign was something that really resonated. I mean, without going too much into the detail, but one of the main, you know, conversations around the brand is that it's authentic connections, right, over shared food and such. And noting that we brought in creators, you know, Jay Something, Chef and T, Lorna, and just trying to understand, you know, how can we create some great bingeable content during lockdown? But noting that as an alcohol company, and as you know, we were through a ban or two.
Yes.
Responsible around that. And, you know, there was a lot of, like, nuances to it. But the main thing that I want to take out is that it was really tied to a Save Your Spot campaign. So every voucher you bought, you know, it was going to help a restaurant. I mean, in the end, I mean, it was, like, literally, you know, it was just, it really just hits you really, really here by your heart, because we saved over 500 spots. But more so than that, we have an ongoing relationship with such amazing creators. But during that time, just coming onto your Instagram feed and seeing Chef and T cook from her kitchen, you're not just getting the brand experience, but it was edutainment, you know. You felt like the brand was speaking with you and not at you. And there was just so much that we learned during that time. Obviously, the end goal, you know, you want to save the spot, but just how we treated our influencers, how we onboarded them, how everyone came together just to switch on this campaign. For me, it really, really stood testament to collaboration, which has been the theme of our chat today, but also just localizing the brand a lot, you know, because just the faces we've had on and the conversation, the feedback that we got and the positive sentiment really showed us and provided us with confidence that the plans we have now till the end of the year is right spot on, what, no pun intended, with where the consumer wants to see this brand. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. And sneakily, if I have to say a second one, I really like the Brutal Fruit, Brutally Responsible. I mean, every Saturday we would have our Spritzer challenge. Spritzer has been doing so well, but the Brutally Responsible was really important, because when the ban was lifted, it was important that each brand, through their channels of influence, advocated for responsible drinking. And we had the girls come onto Instagram, but they did it very TikTok style, just showing, you know, like, what would happen if you're not responsible. Like, you literally could have the privilege taken away from you. So yeah, that was also really exciting for us. Yeah.
I remember following the Save Your Spot campaign, and it was really impactful. And I think it resonated so well with everyone, especially in South Africa, because it kind of tapped into that human behavior and that human truth that was going on at the moment and probably still going, where everyone was watching their favorite kind of dining spaces or favorite pubs really struggle. And coming out of lockdown, a lot of them closed down. So I think people were quite willing to help if they could, which just kind of drove that campaign to be so successful.
Exactly. And all the influencers, I mean, I even stopped saying the word influencers. I call everyone creators. I mean, I remember having a conversation with Jay something where, you know, he was just absolutely, I mean, he's been in this specific food space, you know, being a restaurant owner, and that knew what it meant to be impacted. And just the added effort that he brought with his team, it really, and I say this, you know, not lightly, it really was so amazing that we had the right partners at the right time. Because yes, you can get any influencer that can be brand mapped to a passion point, but having those that are so passionate about it, everyone even got along very, very well together. And so for us, yeah, it was really a job well done. Massive team effort. It was not a win alone, and it just showed all your touch points. I mean, radio, print, social media, everything came together for this one singular goal. So yeah, and I can't wait for you guys to see what we have planned for the rest of the year. So really stuff for Stella Artois.
I think you mentioned something super, super important, yeah, that also goes hand in hand with kind of tapping into human behavior or that psychology behind what we do, is finding the right influencers or creators to execute. You need to have people who is authentic, like a Jay something, like a Lorna, who is in that kind of space and kind of can feel and kind of empathize with what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think we might touch a bit later on, but it's so important, whether you get a brief or you know it's a campaign coming up, not to just take, and I say this to anyone listening, you know, wherever you may be sitting on the corporate side or the agency side or consulting, just don't try and do like paint by numbers, you know, really brief, understand the brand, and if you need to push back, please do so, because you really need to think about the creators or the influencers that you're matching to your brand. Yes, brand passion points is one element, but you can have everyone that ticks that box, but you know, there might not even be a chemistry fit, so to speak. So we've like just in the last 2 weeks, you know, we had like a really cool chemistry session with a particular influencer, just to see if they even just get along with the brand over and above consuming it, you know. And those are just two different tactics that you wouldn't think. You'd think that it's a lot, it's, as they would say, it's being extra. But when you're investing that amount of time and money on a collaborative effort, you want to know that you're not wasting each other's time. So that for me is really important. So, yeah.
That's a really good good point. And I think everyone should make a note of that, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, Desh, in your mind or in your opinion, how does using influencers or creators in a space help brands really connect with their audiences?
Yeah, you know, I always go back to this, I call it the title that never existed, Channels of Influence, right? Because I remember when I interviewed the role, it's like, I can't even research this because there's nothing that exists, you know?
It's like, so, what is this?
It's quite nice. But, you know, jokes aside, you know, literally by virtue of the name Channels of Influence, it's about it living within the ecosystem of your digital. So the same reason why you would use Twitter, it's very conversational. Or, you know, YouTube, larger platform, you're going to an influential people, platforms or partnerships to push out your brand comms. But the difference here is that what is proxy for paid media? So yes, for sure, some brands will put paid media behind the influencers, and that's a whole other conversation for another day, right? But the most important thing is whether you put R1,000 or nothing, it needs to be credible, it needs to be authentic. And I always say this is the true core of influencer marketing. You're merely using another channel to drive comms, but in a more authentic way. It goes back to the early days. I mean, I sound like I'm going back to forefather days. But you know, I know when a new restaurant, like, you know, pre-lockdown days would come up, immediately before even going to Google, I would just go to Facebook, and I know that you would see, you know, like an aunt or an uncle recommended or a friend. And because it was like five people removed from you, you felt like, oh, okay, this is an honest referral. I think Mark Zuckerberg even said something about that at one point, right?
So he did. Yeah.
When influencers, you know, say, here, I am attached to this brand, and this is the comms that I'm putting out, it really helps land a more purposeful and authentic connection. The sad thing, though, is this industry has been marred with a lot of, you know, scandal and issues and such like that. It becomes hard to see the true intent. And that is why it's important for I would say the guys that are much more bigger in the industry, or the bigger, you know, I would say companies. I said the same thing to Sadiqa, even at Tiger Brands. We were having a long conversation. I said, it's almost like we all have this duty now to make sure we run along with everyone else, you know. It's such an amazing platform. So yeah, to answer your question, I definitely think it has a specific role. It might change time to time depending on the company, you know. But for here and now, I think it's just about getting the right reach out there and using a credible voice.
I think you're so right. It is up to the bigger corporates to kind of redeem everyone else's faith in influencer marketing. Because sometimes you say the word and people look at you like you've just sworn. I mean, let's be honest.
Can you imagine? And for me, it was like, okay, the first thing I need to do is, you know, approach the sentiment around influencer marketing and move on to the next mission. But it's a good challenge to take on, you know?
Oh, it's a wonderful challenge because you're not fighting something that you know doesn't work. We've got such great tools that we can now measure and actually showcase how well it works if it's been done right. And I think that's the biggest education job to get out there as well. Saying you can do influencer marketing and have a bad experience, but then delve deeper. Why? Where did you go wrong? And just tweak and tweak and tweak going from there.
Exactly. And I was just reading up even around the whole influence for good, you know. Obviously starting through lockdown and now where we are, we've been as a team working with the data team and such, just making sure that we understand what is the conversation around lockdown. And there's a big process that happens, and then there's a weekly report that's shared. And I remember reading one around, you know, the misinformation from influencers around, you know, safety practices around COVID.
Yeah.
You realize it's such a dangerous space because you are an influencer. So by nature of anything you say, you're going to influence. And then I just started, you know, this is a project that I'm working on internally, just around influence for good. You know, there is a lot that you can do, and it's an exciting space. Also around diversity and inclusion, something I am so passionate about. And when you look at those pockets and those elements, you realize that the work that you're going to do, yes, it is for your brand comms, but innately you're also going to shift a lot of mindsets with it. And you know, in the future, that becomes more at the forefront. So yeah, around the influence for good, I think there's a lot that can be done. And I'm excited to see a lot of our, you know, other brands kind of delve into that space and use these channels to push the greater good out.
Absolutely. And I think coming back to your point about influencers needing to start being more cognizant that they have a responsibility to these people that listen to them, who think that everything they say is credible, to also, before they post things, just make sure that where it comes from, like, it's a credible source. Because during lockdown, I saw some people that I follow, some influencers that I really rate, and they were sharing some information that I was like, guys, this is not true. Please just research a little bit, because not everyone is in our space. So it's easier for us to see these things where people who aren't in digital or aren't in the advertising space per se would take this face value, and it can do so much damage to you, to your reputation, to other people who's following your advice. It's just so dangerous.
It is very, very scary space.
So how do you foresee influencer marketing and digital marketing working closer together over the next year or so?
Yeah, no, definitely exciting. I mean, you know, I'll have plans, but of course the world shows you otherwise.
Yeah. 2020!
but I think, you know, around, so I'll answer this in two kind of spheres. So on, from the corporate side, right, there's a lot of work that's been done around, you know, publisher mindset. We've seen this even with Red Bull, and Apollo, who heads up media at Red Bull, and I were having a conversation around it, just around them being such, you know, thought leaders in this space. So I definitely think brands are going to look at more long-term relationships, bigger projects, or whether it's like a Netflix special, or it could even be a branded podcast instead of just one-off bursts. I'm not saying those will disappear. I mean, those sponsored posts will always be around, right? But I do think
that conversations
are going to happen, and we're going to start like leading across channels. So you'll see a lot of these relationships will now come through maybe on TV or radio, just really disruptive channels. And then on the influencer side, and this is what I kind of like about my role, because I really get to go and spend time with influencers and creators. And I've just sat with, like, you know, some guys in music as well as in fashion and beauty. And I think it goes back to what I said earlier on, just owned platforms. So for an example, there was a particular person, I'm not going to out their name right now, but channel, but they have a full team, so the content is not out there, but they already know, like, for the next 16 weeks this is the weekly drop they're putting out and how it fits in their bigger ecosystem. And this is someone we're just so used to seeing gigging, you know, normally like a normal DJ. The fact that
I'm so curious.
Yeah, said person is actually creating like a mini media empire. There was someone else in the fashion space that was talking about, you know, using Instagram as an actual shop to sell certain wares in a more collaborative method. And I mean, that's when you talk to the likes of Instagram and Facebook, you realize that these partners really need to start like bringing in creators, because that's where you can pilot this new innovation. And then also on the creator side, I'm seeing a lot of business influencers, which excites me, you know. So you're seeing entrepreneurs, or maybe they're starting like a side hustle, but just really influencing like on LinkedIn or even just on podcasts. And that for me is a very small market, but very purposeful. So when I look on both sides, if I try to find the golden thread, it definitely is about, you know, having a very purposeful narrative and not just trying to do once or first. Oh yeah, here's me sipping something. Great. You know, I've got a piece. It's about saying my values are aligned with yours. And the other thing which excites me, and it's something that we're working on, and we've done a bit of it so far, is just positioning ourselves and the tools and the access that we have to help an influencer. So whether it be someone needs to get verified on Twitter or Instagram, or someone needs training, or they need access to a person at Google, whatever it is, there's a lot of merit of us as an organization having access to this. So when an influencer comes over to us, we can have that conversation. I remember when I started in November, there was a particular person that came through, and, you know, they had like 3 or 4 challenges. And I felt so bad, because they were trying for the last 2 years to solve this, because they're not an agency, right? So it's not like they're an Ogilvy. And we helped them with like 2 out of their 4 problems. And they just couldn't believe it. They were like, wow, I can't believe that this was done in the space of 3 weeks. And I realized that we were almost also an agency to these influencers, you know? So it was so exciting. And I hope that grows more. It's definitely what we obviously offer as part of when we do our relationships with them. But just giving back and helping them. Because the more they succeed, they're a better partner to us. But then when they leave, they feel empowered outside of a paycheck.
That is so great, because it's in a true partnership. It's not just come in, do your campaign and then leave. They do feel, I would say, then a sense of loyalty to you as well, and go above and beyond and really love your brand.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So Jesh, you mentioned that we will start seeing, and we're already starting to see it, influencers being used across channels, not just with their influence marketing on their social media or digital, but kind of going across into the out-of-home spaces, on your TVCs and all of that. Are you a big kind of ambassador for kind of merging influencer marketing, digital and traditional?
Yeah, I mean, yes, you know, because the thing is, and I'm just thinking of this because I went through an issue last year. I was like, why does the brief always end up last at influencer marketing? It's like, oh, yeah.
Yes.
and we need influencers, you know. And this was before I started at AdLib. I was doing like a month of consulting, and I'm like, you call me in now?
But then, don't you think it's the same as with PR? PR and influence marketing, they literally have like one line item at the bottom, and then like when you are 3 weeks from launching, they're like, oh, we need to get the PR and influence guys. You're like, guys, we should have sat at the table from the day one so we could walk the journey together. But in any
case. Exactly. and that's why, like, even like now, we'll say, for example, the Stella Artois stuff and a few other brands that we worked on just prior to lockdown, it's like the brief almost started with influencer marketing because the idea was spot, you know, by, say, for an example, a JD or whatever. And then, of course, everyone gets put in. And I did a lot of research and just seeing a lot of like counterparts in other markets do it, you realize that these briefs actually are started by not even just influencer marketing, right? So I work close with Sanele, he heads up social media, and then him and his team might pick up something just by a tweet, and then we have something called like a chat room where we just have like weekly ideas, and then it evolves into a full-on campaign. So I think number one, we need to stop being elitist as to where the brief starts. It doesn't always need to start with the big creative direction and we're shooting the TVC. It could literally come from one of the most obscure channels. I think the second thing for me as well is that every platform, and it comes back to the KPIs and objectives, fulfills a specific goal, but we shouldn't also place too much merit on a traditionally more powerful platform. And I say this, for example, with TV. We've seen this time and time again. You know, when people try to find metrics to measure, for an example, influencer marketing, they'll try to say, okay, so on TV, we would have these ARs and we would measure it in X and Y. So surely, yes, influencer marketing must be the same. It's not. It's bananas and it's apples. No. All part of the same ecosystem, I get it, but totally different. So I think that we just need to learn to play nice together. And it also just starts with an education internally. So for an example, our team, if they're out there shooting a TVC, for an example, they know, let me shoot, for an example, in the specs that would be an Insta story. If the guys are doing something Instagram oriented, they would say, hey, should we get behind the scenes that would fit onto YouTube? If we're doing something with influencer marketing, it sounds so silly, but honestly, like, we would say, you know what, let's save these Insta stories. We might be able to use it as evergreen content that the guys might want to pop onto the website, you see. But it only happens when everyone's literally at the table and they understand what you bring to the brief, so to speak.
Look, I think that is the ideal way to work, and I think we have a long way to go until everyone does that, but it's just so advantageous and beneficial to the brand and the influencers if everything flows and there's that golden thread that is so seamless that goes through everything.
100%. You know, we'll get there. Who knows, when we get there, there'll be new challenges, right? But I think as long as we have the brave, or should I say loud mouths, asking the questions, which is like myself in every meeting.
That's fine. We need you guys.
Yeah.
So Desh, that actually brings us to the end of this conversation, which was just so insightful. So thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
No, thank you. I always say that it's so nice to just to have a seat at the table and to be able to share a bit more behind the closed doors of what we do. Because often you guys do see our campaigns, which we absolutely love. We get the feedback. But just kind of sharing a bit more on the inner workings of the why, you know, why we did such things. And again, transparency is what we're really about. Because as we rise, we need to lift others as well. And I know there are other brand teams out there listening with the same challenges. So if I could have helped one person, I am so happy and grateful today.
And that's exactly why we have this podcast. So thank you so much. So Desh, where can our listeners find you online if they want to learn more about you or to see all the cool things that you get up to?
Sure. I actually was trying to whittle down my platforms. I was like, I cannot do all the platforms all the time because I just got onto TikTok and now I feel like it's a child that I need to feed, you know. But I would definitely say I am that Desh. So everyone's like, oh, that Desh, everywhere. So that's my handle. Also, I have a website called thedigihype.com. And for me, it's just the community that I've created with, from my agency days to now, where just people, whoever have questions about digital, all encompassing, to hit me up. I'm all about collaboration. So definitely check it out. And yeah, I'm inspired by you guys. So I launched a podcast. It's dropping in the next 2 weeks. And I want to say available in all podcast platforms, but yeah, you know the one platform is giving me an issue. But I am on Spotify.
It's giving everyone issues, Dash. Don't worry. Everyone.
I hope Apple's not listening to us and they don't like marketing stuff.
Yeah. Can you imagine they're like shadow banners or something? Oh like, no! Yeah,
exactly. No, but it's called Influencer Insider, and it's just about, you know, bringing a lot of the guys that you would see traditionally as influencers. So each episode, they come in with a challenge, we solve it, and also just the faces that are influential behind your best brands. We've got guys from like Red Bull, Tiger Brands, all of that, just chatting and talking about their approach. And what's really interesting is some of the questions are very left field. So I have a particular influencer from Tanzania. He has 5 million followers, or influencers, 5 million followers. And he basically tells us what it's like to wake up and have your notifications on. You can imagine his battery days, right? But
things like questions
like that. So I think, yeah, people will definitely binge it. And yeah, I think just stalk me, reach out to me. I'm always up for a conversation.
Look, Desh, I'm definitely one of your first subscribers when that podcast come out. So please keep me updated. It'll be amazing. My advice to the guy with 5 million followers is turn your notifications off.
You know, he dropped phones and then he had not set it up and he was like, oh my.
I love it so much. I can't wait. Yes, and everyone definitely follow at that Desh on Instagram and Twitter. On Twitter especially, you give out so many good tips for anyone who wants to learn more about just digital marketing. So very good person to follow.
I was in a boardroom and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to tweet that so I don't forget. And then I try to favorite my own tweets. So for me, it's like a...
I would love that. I should do that. I just write things down old school. But I feel like that's more valuable, actually.
Just never do it when you're angry because, yeah, HR will
not do that. No. No. Never, ever tweet or gram when you're in a bad space, headspace, ever. Thank you again, Desh, and I hope we speak to you soon again.
No, for sure, and when everything is up and out, hope to see all you guys supporting us. We have a lot of stuff planned for the next year. So yeah, just again, thank you to everyone that supports all our brands. We see you, we feel you, we appreciate you, and more so just for giving me this platform. I'm really, really appreciative of it. So yeah, thank you.
Not huge pleasure, but you go and have a great weekend and we'll chat soon.
Okay, awesome. Thanks. Bye.